morning, first case this morning is 071357 for Global V Technologies, being the ITC. Mr. Angelari, first.
May it please the court, Frank Angelari for Global Technologies. We're appealing one issue, and the response are appealing many other issues. We go first merely because our appeal became right first, and that's how the briefing went in, and that's how we ended up agreeing with the argument order. Our issue is public use, and in our view, the ITC errs a matter of law in its public use holding, because the findings as found by the ITC don't meet either the accessible to the public or the commercial exploitation prongs of public use. To be a public use that qualifies public use,
one of the accessibility to public square this with the Baxter case, where there was even less access to the public of that blood centrifuge in that case.
The Baxter case, there were fewer people, I agree, Your Honor, but there was essentially no control placed by the inventors. Here we had significant restrictions and limitations on secrecy, and we have essentially an undisputed record that those limitations...
Secrecy?
Yes.
And there were no confidentiality agreements.
That's true, but we employed many other restrictions on disclosure of the patented designs.
Well, that didn't let people take pictures or something like that, but nonetheless, all these people observed the design.
That's true, Your Honor.
Enjoyed all of its ornamental features.
I didn't hear the word you
enjoyed
said.
All
yes.
Its ornamental features. I mean, the design was on display,
the
right?
The fiberglass mock-up vehicle was on display.
And your argument at the very bottom is that the display, which was here to the public, can't be an invalidating public use unless it's enabling. Isn't that what you're saying? You're saying that the public has to be able to make and use the invention.
No, I don't go that far.
Why aren't you going that far? You're saying they couldn't reproduce it. That's the very words in your brief.
Yes.
Reproducing an invention is done when you are enabled to do so. And we've held way back in 92, I think it was, or 94 in the Epstein case, that the disclosure doesn't have to be enabling to be an invalidating public use.
It doesn't have to be enabling. But the difference is, Your Honor, we employed significant restrictions on the...
So what? It was still public.
I don't think it was public. It was invite only. The no one could come and go. That's a significant distinction.
Invite only doesn't make something non-public, does it?
I think it's a significant factor. I think that... And Bernhardt is a great case for talking about whether or not you need a confidentiality agreement. If you needed a confidentiality agreement, then... We'd be done. But the law is clear, you don't need a confidentiality agreement. If you look at Moleculon, there's no confidentiality agreement. If you look at Bernhardt, there's no confidentiality agreement. It comes down, TP Labs had no confidentiality agreement. And this court's jurisprudence is that when there is no
confidentiality... The confidential relationship we pointed out in TP Labs, the patient-doc-dentist relationship in that case, is there anything of that nature here?
No, there isn't. And that I don't think you need a confidential relationship. There are different reasons that one might not need a formal confidential.
Is there anything that would have prevented someone from leaving the showroom and saying, oh, they've got square lights with three little vertical things in the corner?
Is there anything? Yes. I think that, first, legally, no. Practically, yes. And also...
You're using honeycomb instead of egg crate shapes for some of their designs.
If...
What would anything prevent that?
Not legally, no. But I think that...
What practically?
Pardon me?
What practically? I mean, these people who were free to go home and tell their friends and their wives and their neighbors what they had seen. As Judge Rader was pointing out, they'd say, well, I saw egg crate, or I saw this, or I saw that. What practical limitation?
That's not even close to disclosing the entire design.
You said in response to Judge Rader that there was no legal restriction on any of these people conveying to whomever they wished the essence of what they saw.
I think
you said there were some practical limits, like they can't speak or their tongue is tied.
No. The practical limitation is they can't communicate the designs. And when we employ restrictions,
they can't do what?
Pardon?
They can't
communicate the designs. Designs aren't concepts.
Who said they couldn't communicate the design?
They said they couldn't. Their answers, there is no substantial evidence that they could communicate any of the patented designs. There's none in the record.
They were unenabled, right?
They were unenabled, but it's not an enabling concept. I think it relates to the effectiveness of the secrecy measures that we employed. The law is clear that we don't have to have an absolute confidentiality agreement. It's also clear that public use is a use without any limitations or restrictions. Here we have limitations and restrictions that fall short of a formal legal confidentiality agreement. The fact that they couldn't communicate these designs goes...
What are those limitations? Remind me.
They're on pages 20 and 21 of our brief. There's security guards at the door. There's invite only. There's checkers.
There's a security guard at the door. That's to keep people from coming in, right?
Yes.
Just to make certain that the people who got invited came in.
Correct.
Because they wanted to make certain that the control group that was looking at this stuff was, as they requested, it was the segment of the public that was hand-picked by your client.
Hand-picked, right? Yes.
So all the guard was doing was making certain that somebody whose view of the design that Ford felt was irrelevant didn't get in.
For example, to exclude the press.
Besides the armed guards who were there to police the attendance list, what other factor do you say precludes finding a public use?
The most significant restriction that we employed was the no cameras, no sketches, no drawings. That restriction, coupled with the exclusion of auto industry insiders and folks who might conceivably take these designs out, effectively prevented, they were the functional equivalent of a confidentiality agreement. And I don't say that enablement's the test, but when you employ restrictions and there's no question that they worked, it's the functional equivalent of a confidentiality agreement.
All right. Let's hear from Mr. Perry.
May it please the court, good morning, Your Honors. I'm Alan Berry for the respondents of the proceeding below. I just want to introduce Heather Boyce and Brian Alley, my colleagues. Your Honors, from the standpoint of the respondents in the proceeding below, this appeal is all about the Houston event. The Houston event was clearly a commercial launch of the F-150 truck designs. And what is hard to understand here is how you have an event where you have two full-size F-150 truck prototypes. You have nearly 1,000 people looking at those prototypes. You have smaller groups. By the way, prices were given on those prototypes, MSRP, financing. Everything you wanted to know about buying one of those prototypes was there on the floor. And then you have the inventors who were caught on videotape witnessing attendees describe how they explained those designs and describe those designs to others outside the Houston event. In fact, you had Mr. Metros, another inventor, admit that, yes, he's witnessed people who were telling...
Was there any evidence anywhere that any of the complete designs, if possible, were displayed or conveyed outside of the confidential room?
The evidence that we have, Your Honor, is that these respondents or these participants were not asked to replicate the design.
Is there any evidence in the record that there was any conveyance of any aspect, even, let alone the whole design, which of course is what has to be conveyed outside of the confidential room?
No, there's not, Your Honor, nor for commercial.
Then why is it public?
Because it's commercial exploitation. What we have here is Ford attempting to shoehorn this case into a public accessibility type of public use. And in Vitrogen, this court's opinion in Vitrogen says we have two species. One is public accessibility, and the other one is commercial exploitation. And we know that the Kitson-Bell line of cases does not care whether it was secret or not, whether there's overwhelming evidence of commercial exploitation. And that's what we had here. And insofar as the notion that these attendees had to go out and reproduce the designs, that's not correct. In Rain Man said the only way you can make use of a design is to exhibit it, display it, experience it, and observe it. And that's what happened at the Houston event. So we do not agree with the contention that these people had to leave the Houston event and somehow replicate the designs, albeit it is correct.
Would it be possible to do that, do you think?
That's speculating as to what these
Do you think, just taking one, the headlight, the front headlight, would it be possible for someone to look at that passing by, getting an impression, and go outside and replicate it?
From the evidence that has been...
They were, of course, forbidden to do so.
Right. But from the evidence that was provided, I think the answer to that is yes. These were full-size vehicles, Your Honor, that you could walk around and observe.
But think a little bit about what you just told me. You're telling me that someone from memory could replicate the multitude of different shapes, the arrays, the small light, the larger light, the three stripes in the corner, the marker lamp, which is kind of an offset trapezoid. You're serious if you think that could be done by someone.
I think the impressions from an order...
No. We're not talking about impressions here. We're talking about the... Remember, it's the detail that counts. We hold, in ornamental designs, we hold an infringer to every aspect of the complete detail. And so that's what they'd have to replicate.
And I understand it may be difficult, Your Honor, but if you consider the fact...
Difficult? That's even an overstatement, isn't it?
I don't understand.
It would be a feat beyond the ordinary by a great step, wouldn't it?
It may, Your Honor, but I do not understand the relevance of the need for these people to have reproduced outside the Houston event what they saw in detail. Because the subject matter of that event entered the public domain 1 year later. And that's the point. It was taken out of the public domain by the fact that Ford didn't file any design patents here from 2 to 3 years after the event. This was highly material subject matter. No question about it. The commission found that. Three patents were held invalid in light of the Houston event. These Houston event prior art was the subject matter of the obviousness analysis, the anticipation analysis, and why. In light of Egyptian goddess, the obviousness determination should be sent back?
Infringement,
yes, we do. The point, though, on the materiality...
For all the rest of the other three.
Oh, that's correct.
The other four.
Right. We didn't have Egyptian goddess to work off of at the time.
Yeah, so those had to go back.
That's correct, right?
Is that only infringement?
Resolving infringement and the
law... Conceded copying here?
But they didn't rely on a point of knowledge, did they? I mean, in effect, they applied Egyptian goddess, didn't they?
Egyptian goddess was not applied, Your Honor.
Of course, they didn't have it. But the point of Egyptian goddess is you don't rely on the point of novelty test, and that's exactly they used the ordinary observer test.
But we didn't use the Egyptian goddess ordinary observer. We did not use the Egyptian goddess ordinary observer.
No, there's no such thing as an Egyptian goddess ordinary observer. That goes back to Gorham and the Supreme Court years and years before.
But
and you certainly had that, and you applied that. That's all Egyptian goddess required you to do.
But Egyptian goddess requires the ordinary observer to be cognizant of the prior art. That was not the ordinary observer that
you
proceeded.
And you don't think Gorham required that?
I don't think Gorham required it because that was the purpose I understood of point of novelty being added to begin with. But the bottom line is there was no ordinary observer who was cognizant of the prior art that assessed these patents for infringement purposes. Your Honors, I want to touch on one point here before my time is up, and that is to say that we are deeply troubled about no finding of inequitable conduct. I know you hear this defense many times before, but where the commission found the Houston event was prior art based on inventors having witnessed people describe what they told others outside of the event, caught on videotape doing that, admitting that, and not to have conducted
a... Well, we had a pretty significant debate here about whether the confidentiality was sufficient to make this something other than public. With that kind of a question hanging in the balance, even here at the final stages, how would you attribute intent to what they did?
I would attribute intent, Your Honor, because the commission did not move on to consider should have known. Should they have known when they are schooled on the law?
No, you're missing kind of the point. The point is, it's a close call whether this is a public use at all. They didn't disclose it, but don't they have a pretty good reason not to disclose it? They thought they were being confidential. They had sealed the doors, they didn't allow pictures, and they were relatively confident that nobody with photographic memory would leave and replicate the designs.
But the materiality here is based on the fact that this was commercial exploitation. They were, the commission relied on the subjective intent of these inventors to find no intent to deceive. In fact, simply ended the analysis at actual knowledge, never even considered should they have reported this to the patent attorney. Because they were schooled on what it took to be public use, they were schooled on what would happen if they did not report material information to the patent office. So why the commission did not engage in a should-have-known analysis to infer intent, we believe, was not only an abuse of discretion, but doesn't support the lack of intent finding. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Jonathan Engler for the International Trade Commission. I'd like to begin briefly with discussion of the Egyptian goddess question that you raised. In this case, in the anticipation analysis that the ALJ undertook, he looked at the patented designs with the eye of an ordinary observer, conversing with the prior art. If you look at the record, there's a fairly extensive discussion of the various prior art references that Keystone raised. So, whether or not Egyptian goddess changes anticipation analysis, the ALJ properly took into account all the prior art references and did the Egyptian goddess analysis without calling it such, of course, a name. However, just describe. So in our, the ALJ did what he needed to do on anticipation. One thing, however, that...
What about on the infringement side of the coin? Am I wrong? I was under the impression that there really wasn't any contest over whether or not infringement had occurred. If there had been a copy.
Well, in our view, there is no question that infringement occurred. Keystone has questioned whether the ALJ's analysis was...
It has to be copying, doesn't it? It has to be an exact copy for the aftermarket part to be bought as a replacement.
Precisely.
It's going to replace your honeycomb Gresh with an egg carton Gresh mesh grill or whatever, ruins your 150.
Well, that's the whole entire purpose of this.
The entire purpose, exactly.
And also, it's consistent with this court's jurisprudence on the question. In L.A. Deere, the court found that copying is admitted to substantial similarity is not disputed, and there's infringement. So we really don't see how there can be an issue on infringement. Turning to the public...
What is the notion that Egyptian goddess somehow bites on this appeal?
I beg your pardon?
Egyptian goddess is irrelevant, isn't it, to this appeal?
I agree. I can't see the relevance of Egyptian goddess in the infringement analysis.
And Egyptian goddess is an infringement case, right?
Correct.
The close call is probably obvious, isn't it?
Well...
There are minor differences, so you can escape the anticipation counts. Why isn't there an obviousness concern here?
Well, as a preliminary matter, Keystone provided no testimonial evidence about the overall visual impressions of the claim designs as a whole compared to the prior art. So the factual predicate before we start getting into the question of the individual prior art references, there's simply no evidence on the record. The administrative law judge went through quite a bit of detail through the evidentiary gaps here. and testimony of Keystone's witness was simply not on point. And that, the burden was on Keystone, of
this
course.
This is Mr. Skalski, right?
That's correct. I mean, given that Keystone is alleging invalidity, they had the burden to provide clear and convincing evidence.
Are there also strong secondary considerations to help you?
Well, there are strong, of course, secondary considerations to help us in the sense that there's the commercial success, of course, of the Florida parks.
Yes, but I'm hoping you're going to throw copying out here.
Well, the fact is that copying...
Now I want to ask you the question, though. Given what we just discussed, which is that of necessity, this market requires copying.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have an egg crate mesh on one side and a honeycomb mesh on the other side of your 150th. So you have to copy to meet the market. Does that vitiate at all the copying, the strength of the copying secondary consideration? Because they're no longer copying because it's a marvelous inventive feature. They're copying because that's what the market requires. So it really isn't a secondary consideration, is it?
Well, it's the primary consideration. Is it?
I'm saying there's no nexus because this copying in this instance does not indicate the value of the invention. It's required by the market.
Well, precisely.
Then it's not a secondary consideration.
In this case, it would not be a secondary consideration.
Well, so I lured you into saying copying, I'll let you off the hook.
I beg your pardon?
I lured you into saying copying is a secondary consideration, but I think it's somewhat undercut by this the facts of this case, isn't it?
Well, I wouldn't say so much that it's undercut, but that the obvious analysis in a case involving copying, that the two somewhat merge, because you're not the question isn't whether there's really no dispute that when you're comparing the accused design to the patented design, that the analysis of whether it was an obvious one of ordinary skill in the art to make that duplication is really not a helpful inquiry that's sort of that is supplemented in any way by the secondary considerations. It's one of the funny spots that we find ourselves in because of the limited copying that I think sometimes gets a little bit lost in some of the briefing. It's fundamental to this case. And if I may for a moment, unless you have further questions, I'd like to turn to a couple of issues on this public use question that we've spent so much time on. Fundamentally, the point that Ford is missing, that for purposes of the public use analysis, the 1,000 members of the public who were invited to this marketing event had no obligation of secrecy to Ford and were free to leave this event and talk to whoever they wanted to about what they saw. Those 1,000 people were the public for the purposes of a public use analysis. And as this court said back in Egbert v. Lippman, that even one person can constitute the public if their relationship between the inventor or the patentee and that person is one in which there's no obligation of confidentiality. So here we have a case where 1,000 people had no obligation of confidentiality.
What, did they have no obligation of confidentiality? They were stopped from taking pictures. They were monitored to some degree.
Well, the question that this court has raised is whether there's in previous cases, first of all, these are specific, one has to take into account the facts and circumstances in the totality, not isolated issues like the confidentiality agreement, or the absence of one. But rather, none of those issues, the security not being permitted to bring in cameras, created any obligation between the attendee and Ford. In fact, it's relevant that the attendees did not even know that this was Ford's event. It was handled by a third party. So, which the Morpace, I think, was the name of the conference organizers, which further argues against this notion that these parties could have had any obligation of confidentiality to Ford, who had no idea who was involved with this.
He says that even more important than public use is the fact that this was commercial exploitation.
Well, that was the next point I wanted to touch on.
Yeah, right. And this isn't experimental use or anything like that. This is marketing, isn't it?
Exactly. And this court has held before, with design patents, the experimental use doctrine doesn't apply because they are, in essence, they have design patents have no scope, so as soon as they are finalized, and that's the design, there's just no way to experiment with them without changing the design completely. And this court has held in In Re Smith that market testing after design was finalized, in which people, and that was a case in which the question was, would customers be interested in buying this finalized product, and how much would they pay, and what would be a fair price? I mean, these were precisely the issues that Ford wanted to address at this marketing event. It's the nature of marketing events. So the this is just...
Well, they didn't have gone all the money to put this show on if there was some benefit to it.
Well,
it's a free art show.
And there's extensive testimony about the expense and the trouble that is necessary to go through to put on such an event and to create these models. So the notion that it was done for purely...
Well, where do you stand with regard to Mr. Anglieri's key argument? He says there can't be a public use where the party who... member of the public who saw the design is incapable of replicating the design.
There's nothing in the case law on public use that has ever suggested that it's necessary for the viewing public to be able to reduce practice in effect from what they saw in order for there to be a public use. First of all, because there's this fact that 1,000 people were the public for the purpose of public use, and that's been, you know, case after case, beginning with Egbert, that is that the public has been undisputedly, not has been, sorry, the public has constituted the person who views.
The key to that, though, and the key to Egbert, is that the young lady who got the advantage of the corset later became the inventor's wife. He did get a benefit seat. But the key to that was she had the full enjoyment of that invention without restriction. These people did not have the full enjoyment of the invention without restriction. They didn't get to drive away the Ford 150s and display them to their friends and get the full benefit of the designs. They merely observed them under restricted circumstances and then left. Why isn't that very different from Egbert?
Because it's very similar to Egbert, because the full enjoyment of a design is its viewing. And these people were able to view and to do what else you would. The question isn't a whole vehicle. There's no patent on the entire vehicle. And so whether they could drive it off a lot and go to a tailgate party isn't really relevant to the question of whether they had the full enjoyment of the fender. In the course of the...
So your point is that two people, for example, at the show who observed the side mirror or the headlamp could say to one another, gee, isn't that a great design on the headlamp?
And that is the nature of the full enjoyment of the design.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Try to respond to the points that came up regarding obviousness of the other issues. For all but one of the patents not found invalid from the Houston Clinic, the respondents did not even present evidence on all the views of the patent. I think there's no substantial evidence, there is substantial evidence to support a finding that they didn't have even a primary reference that you need for obviousness under Borden.
By the way, just an observation. My clerks and I had a horrible time just trying to see the blurry images you gave us in the record. Can't you do a little better job of showing us what we're looking at?
My apologies, Your Honor.
That doesn't apply just to you. That's all the parties, of course. But please proceed.
For most of these, there's no secondary reference. There's no, assuming KSR applies, there's no reason to make, there's no evidence about reasons to make the changes or reasons to modify the primary reference. With respect to the copying, Your Honor, whether it's a secondary consideration or not, 2 points. One, there is an entire industry of people who compete in the aftermarket without copying. There was a motion for summary determination on functionality in this case. They had a functionality defense. We moved to take it out. And one of the reasons we prevailed, and it's not been appealed, is that for each of these parts, there are, in fact, alternative designs available. So I think copying is a true secondary consideration. I think the copying is also relevant.
What did you say about functionality?
They had a functionality defense. We moved for summary determination to get the defense out of the case. We prevailed, and that has not been appealed. The reason we prevailed...
by the amici, but not by the person.
Yes, Your Honor. The reason we prevailed is that there is an industry of aftermarket. It's a big show called SEMA where these parts are displayed, and they're not copies. All of the parts at issue have non-copy parts that are available in the marketplace.
What's that have to do with whether they're functional?
Whether or not the design of our grill is not functional because there are other designs that are available that meet the same functional purposes. The design is ornamental, not functional. For example, the grill. There are many different grills that can be used with the M150. So our design, I think copying is also relevant because it puts a character on the differences. The differences that respondents are describing as trivial, for example, between the Houston Clinic and the commercial parts that they copied, well, they're not trivial to them in the real world because they didn't go and copy the Houston Clinic design. They copied the commercial design. So that is real-world evidence that directly rebuts their position that, well, gee, nobody can really tell the difference between all these parts. They're all the same. With respect to infringement and Egyptian goddess, I don't think it really applies because there is copying. Egyptian goddess goes to framing the significance of differences between the patented and the accused, and there are no differences. With respect to inequitable conduct, there's substantial evidence to support the findings of no intent and credibility. And finally, with respect to the commercial exploitation side of public use, we briefed it and we stand by our briefs, but I think the important point is that comes up in two different ways in two different contexts. When you're talking about rebutting experimental use contention, which we don't make, it's a low standard. But when you're talking about relying solely on commercial exploitation, the Supreme Court and this court require use to make a commercial product, and we don't have that here. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Going backwards, this is a commercial exploitation case just the way it was in Kitzenbach. This court did not address the secrecy issue, but flatly said that Deere was making exploiting its agricultural equipment, and it didn't matter whether it was secret or not. On the all views issue, I'm deeply troubled by it because the evidence is clear, appendix page 79, that there were very minor, if any, changes made from the F-150 prototypes from the Houston Clinic to the eventual commercial embodiment. And more importantly, the reason that all views weren't available, the prototypes themselves were destroyed. They weren't available to the court, to the commission. And also, bear in mind that Ford conceded that three of its patents would be invalid if the Houston Clinic were proven to be prior art. And it, of course, those three patents show multiple views which we may not necessarily see from the prototypes at the Houston event. And just touching on commercial success, we agree there is no nexus. The testimony had to do with the sale of the overall vehicle. The Ford witness explained that there were all kinds of reasons why there may have been commercial success, none of which we could find in this record attributable to the patent designs. If you have any further questions around that, you can take final remarks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.